Okay, welcome everybody who's on Zoom. Thank God we have a nice crowd over there, a nice crowd in person. Bring back some of the life and energy to the shul. And I want to start with a few words of introduction. Definitely a privilege to be able to sit here with you and to fill in or step up where Rabbi Weiss left off. That's a humbling opportunity for me, but something which I hope will allow us to continue with the momentum that previously existed. Mr. Hashem, I wanted to point out a few things, I guess, just in overall. You know, the term that's the name of this Masechta, Moed Katan, is very interesting. You know, we don't usually talk about a big yontif, a small yontif. A moed is a special time on the calendar. What does it mean to be moed katan? So some explain, very interestingly, that it's not that it's big or small, right? If anything, you think about it, chol moed, there's much more chol moed than there is regular yontif. So whatever quantity we're trying to describe over here isn't the usual metric. So where else do we find katan versus gadol? And one example would be right at the beginning of the Torah. When we spoke about this a couple weeks ago, when Hashem creates the sun and the moon, so the Torah refers to them initially as the two Ma'oros HaGadolim, the large luminaries, because they were the same size. And then immediately afterwards, it talks about the Ma'or HaGadol and the Ma'or HaKatan. So one's big, one's small. And we have a Medrash that says that there was a little bit of a disagreement, and Hashem shrunk the moon. But it wasn't just that He shrunk the moon. The quality of the moon, it was transformed entirely. Because besides its size, now instead of producing light on its own, it reflected the light that the sun shines in its direction. So in a similar vein, Moed Katan, the Chol HaMoed is not just a day off. Okay, sometimes you got to go to work. You know, there's no prohibition against Malacha. You can go on a trip, you have some fun. But at the same time, it's important to keep in mind that it still is reflecting, it's absorbing some of the light of the Yomtiv. There's Yomtiv before, there's Yomtiv afterwards, that gives the significance to the day. So I think, you know, with that introduction, the purpose of the Masechta, which focuses on Chol HaMoed, also informs us, you know, it's almost like Chazal, when they named the Masechta, wherever the name came from, it also informs us about what Chol HaMoed represents, which is an important thing to keep in the back of your head. What's ironic, though, is what we're holding in the Masechta, which is towards the end, we're not talking about Chol HaMoed at all. Okay, if you remember back to the beginning of the third parak, which starts on Tesvav, right, about halfway through the Masechta, so we start talking about the laws of Chol HaMoed, and we make a huge shift into Avelus. And just because there's a tangent, that ends up being half the Masechta. Not just half the Masechta, but all of the laws. I was maybe 97% of the laws of Avelus are all found in this Masechta. So what happened over there, right? And you could really ask that question about many sugyas and shas, many Masechtas, where you start learning one thing, all of a sudden you're talking about something totally unrelated, and it takes a few blots till you get back to where the conversation started. So one thing that came to mind, which you can take it or leave it, but I think it's something to consider. Rav Nissen Alpert. Anyone ever hear that name before?
Yeah.
Nissen Alpert was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. He was considered the closest Talmud of Moshe Feinstein.
Yes.
And he was a Rebbe at Yeshiva University. Mm-hmm. Some of my Rebbeim still had him as a Rebbe. I think he died in the early 80s. Yeah. Right, shortly before Moshe Feinstein passed away in 1985 or so. And so he has a sefer, a collection of his drushes on Chumash called Limudei Nisan. And if I recall correctly, in the introduction to Vayikra, he makes a similar comment. Because Vayikra, if you look through like Achremos Kedoshim, also like it jumps around. We're talking about Shatnez. We're talking about, Avahaftaloy HaKamocha. Just like no connection from one pasuk to the next. You know, how do you develop like a theme? How do you develop some sort of continuity? And he says, there isn't a continuity. And that's exactly the point. And he said, that's where the Gemara got it from. He said, if you ever wonder what's going on in the Gemara, it's because the Torah is like that sometimes. Why is the Torah like that? It represents a certain idea, which I think, Shmuley has heard quite a few Gemara Shirim from me in the past. The reason I love this word is because it's what I was taught. So the way you learn, it's not simply that we're very disorganized and we're jumping from topic to topic. You get to the Shulchan Aruch, everything's laid out nicely. When you need to know the bottom line halacha, okay, you need to have organization. But when you're learning, the love of learning is so great that if I, like sometimes you're talking to someone, like someone's name randomly gets mentioned. Oh, haven't heard his name in a while. What's he up to? You know, did he move to Florida? You know, how are his kids doing? And all of a sudden the conversation shifts. The love of learning is such that as soon as we touch upon even a side point, the excitement for that other topic overtakes us and we have to go into that, have a foray into that sugya as well. Until we get back to where we started. Okay, so is it a little disorganized? Yes. But there's also something very significant about what that, is supposed to reflect on our attitude. So I think that's something to consider. I'll put in another reason why I happen to love Moed Katan, just on a personal level, is that this is one of the mesechtas that I had the privilege to learn b'chavrusa with my Rebbe, Rav Meir Twersky. We learned a number of mesechtas over the afternoon seder for quite a while, and this was one of them. So I have special memories going back 15 years or so. But it's also a mesechta that has a special place in the heart of some of my Rebbeim, because the Rav had a very interesting approach. The fact that he gave shir on Moed Katan at all was a chiddush. The Rav, as you may be familiar, lost three close relatives within the span of a number of months. In 1967, first his mother died, shortly thereafter his wife died, and then a few months later his brother died. And it was devastating for him. And he had to take a long time off, and you know, and he wasn't the same person. There, if you talk to Talmidim, I've heard my Rabbi Norma Lam is a cousin of mine. I remember at a family bar mitzvah him talking once about his days in the Rav Shir in the 1940s. And he said it was such a pachad. It was such fear and trepidation. Just walking into the room, in the words of one of a different Rebbe, he said the rope was like a machine gun. Bam, bam, bam. You walked in, you know, like it was, people were scared. I have other Rebbeim who were telling me the rope in the '70s and the '80s. The rope was a much older man, and he'd been through a lot, and he just slowed down, and it was difficult. He spoke many times about the difficulty of that period of life. When he came back to yeshiva that year in 1967. He switched the topic that he were learning, and he went to learn Hilchos Avelos. And he got a little flack from some of the other Rebbeim, some of the senior Rebbeim. One of the Rebbeim in YU in the 60s and 70s especially was Reb Menachem Mendel Zaks. Reb Zaks was a son-in-law of the Chafetz Chaim.
Yep.
So we're talking about close, you know, connection to the Gedolim of Europe. He himself was a tremendous Talmud Chacham.
He's Mashgiach.
He was the Bochein, and Bochein. So... I think my father told me stories about his chain smoking. He used to cut the cigarettes in like five pieces, and his fingers were always blood. From a totally different generation. So Reb Zaks was not happy that the Rav was giving shir on Moed Katan, because the Chassam Sofer already talks about this minhag. And the yeshivas in Europe, they didn't talk about it. They didn't want to learn Hilchos Avelos. You know, the rabbi, when he became a rabbi and he had to deal with unfortunate events in the community, so he had to figure it out. He had to do it on his own. But there was no formal shir in Moed Katan. Whatever the explanation is, there's rumors of bad skulas and unfortunate tragedies that took place when people were learning Moed Katan, but the Rav didn't pay any attention to that. He also gave shiur nida, which in many yeshivas, to give shiur nida to single guys was unheard of. So unheard of. I think Reb Chaim Kanievsky writes that he was 17 and a half, and the Chazanish, his uncle, told him, okay, it's time to learn nida. So it was part of the curriculum. You know, it's in Shas. It's in Shas. So the Rav followed whatever the curriculum was in Volozhin, where his family, Masorah came from. So in Volozhin, if I'm not mistaken, they had a 16-year cycle, going from the beginning of Shas to the end of Shas. So for the Rav, there was nothing you couldn't give shir on. And one thing which I think is it's min hashamayim, not just that he gave shir and it was unusual, but because no one gave shir on Avelis, the Rav's chidushim in the topics of Avelos are so mind blowing and so innovative, because there was just like a whole body of Torah that hadn't been adequately or with that style of learning touched. The Rav used to say about his grandfather, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, before Rav Chaim came along, Yoredeya is the part of Shulchan Aruch which is Isser v'heter, milk and meat, and other types of prohibitions, food, and so he said before Rav Chaim came along, Yoredeya was just pots and pans. Reb Chaim took Yoredeya out of the kitchen. That's how we say. It used to be the Rav had to know the halachos to answer the questions. People want to know what was for dinner, But what Reb Chaim did was he applied his same methodology, his genius, to a whole area of halachos that had never been touched in the same way. I just have to, just the genius of Reb Chaim. A Rebbe of mine told me that Reb Chaim had a cousin. And with this, we'll move on. Reb Chaim had a cousin who was a student of Karl Marx. And he once came to Brisk for Shabbos to visit. And Reb Chaim, he had an amazing head, and he was always learning new things. He said, tell me a little bit about what you heard in Shir, from Karl Marx. So he told him, some of the philosophies and ideologies, communism, things that were developing at the time. And Reb Chaim said to him, no, that's not what he said. What do you mean that's not what he said? I'm sitting in class. He's like, this is how it was told to me. Karl Marx is a gon olam, and he couldn't have said such a thing. So it's fascinating. He had respect for his intellect, even if, you know, I'm sure, I can't tell you politically, they saw eye to eye. And they looked up in the textbook, and Reb Chaim was right. So what does that mean exactly? It means that when even if your intellect is through Torah, but one's mind becomes sharpened in such a way that it even allowed him to interpret and funnel and filter and distill any body of knowledge. We spoke about the Chazanish and the brain surgery recently, but you know, this is one more way in which Reb Chaim applied, you know, a whole new system of learning to parts of Shas that had never been touched in that way before. So with that introduction, it's very exciting to be learning Moed Katan. And I think just as to start and also to get everyone, oh, that is one more thing. This is my own theory. I'm not sure if this is true, but something we can take out of this. The fact that the Rav was so innovative and added so much in this area of halacha, I don't believe it's a full coincidence. I think there's something sitting. If you've ever read Halachic Man, which is one of many magnum opus, you know, writings of the Rav, he talks about how Rav Chaim, his grandfather, I think he says he had a fear of death. But he sharpened more than any other area. I think if you look in the Sefer that Reb Chaim, that was published after his death, there's more space devoted to the laws of Tumas Meis, of what makes you tummy, you know, going here, going there, coming in contact with the dead body. And he said by engaging in that area of halacha, Reb Chaim was able to dissolve any anxiety he had about death, because death became its own discipline as part of Hashem's Torah. And I wonder if a certain flavor can be lent also to Avelus, that I think if we get into it, learning even about death is something which is it's thrilling, as strange as that sounds, as ironic as that sounds, because it brings what's scary for people and what's distant for people sometimes into a whole different arena that's part of our knowledge of Torah. And it's eye-opening sometimes. So let's take a look at just what is really the basis for where we're going to start. We're going to start on Chav Dalet Amud Beis, but Chav Dalet Amud Beis really harkens back to, first of all, Daf Yud Dalet, and forgive me if we don't cover so much ground today, but This is the kickoff, so you know, we'll trade in the kugel for some more lines of Gemara next week. But Yud Dalet Amud Beis, okay? I don't have the same pages as the Steinsel. So I hope it's not. Do you have any more copies? Are there any more copies over there? Oh, okay. It might be easier to follow along in here, just because then we're all using the same system. Okay. So the basis for everything we're going to be doing in the next, we'll say, week or two. Starts with a Mishnah, which you may not, it's not on the sheet, okay, so forgive me, but it's just I'm sorry, a couple lines on Yud Dalet Amud Beis. Okay, I'm sorry it's not in that edition. Ron, can I borrow this for 1 second? For Alan. Yeah, I'm sorry, it's not a Mishnah, I'm sorry. We're going to do a Mishnah in a second. Yud Dalet Amud Beis, let's say about one-third of the way down. Ovel ein noeg aveluso, berego. There's a little gimel there at the beginning of the line.
Yep.
What was that? About 15 lines, 20 lines down from the top. First word in line, ovel ein noeg aveluso berego. Okay? So the first thing you got to know when starting the sugya is that an ovel doesn't, as you're familiar, have the normal behaviors, the normal application of the laws of avelus, berego, on a yantif. Shenemar v'samachta b'chagecha. V'samachta b'chagecha. Okay? So there's a mitzvah to be happy on yantif. So that doesn't really fall in line with Avelos, which is all about being unhappy. So the Gemara says, okay, let's figure out what exactly that means. E Avelos de Mei Karohu, if we're talking about Avelos, I'm sorry, it's not on that sheet. This, we're still on the intro material before we get there. I'm sorry. Okay, bear with me. This will take us 6 minutes. E Avelos de Mei Karohu, if it's Avelos de Mei Karo, like the word Iker, meaning the root, originally, from the start. So if he was already observing Avelos before Yantiv started, so Asi Asei Derabim V'Dachi Asei Diyachid. Then what's going on over here? There's a concept of Asei Derabim, a mitzvah that applies to the general public, overpowers a mitzvah which is a personal mitzvah. So when there's when the person is behaving as an Avel before Yantiv starts, that's his own personal mitzvah. The Avelos is stopped when it clashes with the mitzvah of simcha derabim that the general public is observing. Okay, so let's say Yantav starts, I don't know, Tuesday night. So he's observing Avelos Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Yom Tov starts Tuesday night. So that cancels his Avelos, right? The Avelos de Hashta, and if it's an Avelos de Hashta right now, right? Hashta Bagalov is Mankariv, right now, meaning the Avelos begins in the Yontif, in the middle of the holiday. Lo as yaseh de yachid, v'dach yaseh de rabim. Lo as yaseh de yachid, a personal mitzvah of Avelos, cannot come and knock out the public mitzvah of Simcha that's already operative. Okay? So the Gemara just fleshes out how, either way you slice it, whether he was an Avelos prior to Yontif, Yontif is going to knock him out. And if the Avelos begins, if the death occurs in Yontif, his Avelos can't come and stop Yontif. Yontif is something that is, the whole world is celebrating Yontif. Okay?
When you're talking Avelos, you're talking Shiva.
Right. Right. We'll talk about Shloshim also, right? And, you know, because those are the things that really clash with Yontif. Okay? When it comes to the 12 months, so there's much less that's going to clash with Yontif. Okay? But obviously, sitting Shiva, wearing torn clothing and so forth, we don't do that on Yontif. Right? Okay, so that's the basics. Okay? Mm-hmm. Good. All right, let's go forward again. Okay, one more source that's not on your page, but still basic introduction. Yud Tes Amud Aleph. Okay? So fast forward about four blot, and now we have our Mishnah. Okay, and this is when we get to Chavdal, we're gonna be quoting from this Mishnah. The Mishnah begins, HaKover Es Meso, let me know if you have it, anyone's missing it, or still waiting to get there, right there, Alan, you're right there. Mishnah, right in the middle of the page, HaKover Es Meso Shlosha Yamim Kodem L'Regel, if a person buries their dead, a relative, God forbid, okay, 3 days prior to the Regel, prior to the Yontif, Bat Lahemeno Gezerah Shiva, then Shiva is stopped. Okay, now, the rule over here is 3 days. Rule over here is 3 days. We don't hold like this. The Gemara is later going to say this is the opinion of Beis Shammai, and we follow the other Tanaim, such as Beis Hillel, that even if you keep Shiva for a few minutes, right before the Yontif starts, so then the Yontif already cancels out the Shiva. But right now it's 3 days. Shmona, if a person observes 8 days of Avelos prior to the Yontif, bitloimeno gzer shloshim, then the Yontif cancels out shloshim, right? Because if it's 8 days, he's already completed the 7 days of Shiva. He's on day eight now. He's into that Shloshim only zone. So, same idea. Once he's begun to observe Shloshim a little bit, when the Yontif comes, it knocks out the rest of the observance.
Do you have to start Shloshim?
Oh, okay. So, that's a good question. Let's assume for the moment he has to do some positive action that's unique to Shloshim. Okay? You're asking an excellent question, and there isn't a consensus on this so easily. But let's assume in the same way that, you know, if God forbid there's a death right before Yontif, so even if the Ovel, after the Kuvur, does something as simple as switching shoes to non-leather shoes, or maybe he'll sit on the ground for a few minutes, that is adequate. He's not going to have visitors coming, you know, to have Shiva calls on, you know, 10 minutes before Yontif, but he does one action of Avelos, that's enough. Similar when it comes to Shloshim, okay? The behaviors during Shloshim are not exactly the same. They don't have the same, like, it's much more don'ts than it is do's, right? It's not getting a haircut, not shaving, not, you know, and so forth. But 8 days ahead of a Yontif, you cancel Shloshim. Mevnesha Amru, now here's the general principle. Mevnesha Amru, Shabbos Ola Ve'inam Afsekes. Shabbos Ola Ve'inam Afsekes. Shabbos counts for one of the days of Avelos, right? Every Shiva is going to have a Shabbos in there. So that's one of the seven. Ve'inam Afsekes, but it doesn't interrupt the Shiva. You keep going. And, you know, you carry on after Shabbos is over. It counts as one of the days of Shiva. Mm-hmm. As opposed to Regalim, Afsikim, Ve'inam Olim. Regalim, when it comes to the Yontif, and as we're going to see in a second, applies to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, even though those aren't technically Regal. We don't call them, you know, one of the Regalim. But they have a similar status. Mafsikim, Ve'inam Olim. Number one, they interrupt the observance, the Shiva, the Shloshim. And they also don't count towards the Shloshim. Towards the Shiva. Okay? Meaning, it's done. It's over. There's no way, if God forbid, the death happens on Yontif, that doesn't count towards Shiva, right? The person doesn't start observing Shiva until Yontif is over. So that's the major difference between Shabbos and Yontif. Okay?
Doesn't tell us about Chol HaMoed that it pushes the whole thing off for a week.
Okay, but that's the line. That's the key line. Einam Olam, I mean, it doesn't come into the equation. Right. You can't count it as part of the Yontif. I'm sorry, as part of the Shiva, as part of the Avelos.
Does it make a difference if it's Yontif or Chol HaMoed?
Yeah.
Yeah, right, correct. I mean, it doesn't make a difference. The mitzvah of Simcha applies throughout any Yontif. The mitzvah v'samachta b'chagecha applies to every yantiv. There's no v'samachta b'chagecha when it comes to Shabbos. Something maybe we'll talk about another time, but it's good to at least consider what the implication over here, based on our previous we saw a moment ago, is that there's a mitzvah of simcha on yantiv, but there's no mitzvah of simcha on Shabbos. Right? If you think about it, there's oneg, right? There's oneg.
Oneg.
There's oneg. So give it a little thought, partially because Shabbos may not be totally devoid, so to speak, of an inyan of simcha. It happens to be we say in the musaf of Shabbos, we say yismachu b'malchuscha. The words of tefillah are not arbitrary. You know, it's not just poetry. If it says simcha, it's not by accent. There's actually, it's a pasuk in Bahalosecha, Bahalosecha, when it talks about the chatzotros, the horn that they would blow on certain occasions, the pasuk goes like this: the v'yom simchaschem uv'moadechem uv'roshech hatshechem. Right? Okay, good. We got a lot of balkoris here. Okay, so that's the command to blow chatzotzos. So v'roshech hatshechem, we know what that is. That's Rosh Chodesh. But moadechem means the regala, right? So what's v'yom simchaschem? What's left? What's left? When else you met Purim? Can't be talking about Purim, right? Purim came 1,000 years later. Right. Oh, so the Sifri, the Medrash says, it's talking about Shabbos. So again, to explore another time, Shabbos has a dimension of simcha to it, but it's not the same dimension of simcha as a Yom Tov. What do I mean by that? So when we talk about the mitzvah of simcha, it's very clearly prescribed. It's very clearly prescribed. I'll give you a taste of it right now, but a few more lines we'll have a fuller understanding. The method by which a person fulfills the mitzvah of simcha on Yom Tov, anyone know?
Oh, yeah, nice clothes for the women,
Okay.
Meat for the men, and
okay.
Wine for the men.
Good, so it seems to be there's some sort of sliding scale or, you know,
gender-specific,
age-appropriate.
The jewelry has something to do with it also.
What's that?
Jewelry,
clothing, yeah, it's all part of it. Right, so there's actually...
What is that? The rabbis so say that.
So I got to tell you something. It's funny you bring that up. In Rav Nevinsel, the chief rabbi of the Old City, so he has a set of sparim on the Yom Tovim, and in the back of every volume, he has sometimes the most random Q&As, and somehow they tie him into the topic of the Sefer, but people ask him fascinating questions. So one person asked him, the topic was Yom Tov, I don't know, they don't tell you who sent it, he must have sent it anonymously, but his question was, do you have to buy your wife clothing or jewelry for Yom Tov if she's mochel? Right? She says, no, it's okay. You know, I don't need it. So we know just because someone says they're mochel doesn't mean they're really mochel. Okay? But that's not the answer he gives. That's not the answer he gives. He says, even if she's mochel, you have a chiyuv bein adam lamakom. That, I think, that can give your whatever you do for your spouse takes on a whole different meaning when you think about it like that, right? Ish v'isha shechina beinahem. Right, it's more than just like I made you happy. It's an effort to create a bias in Yisrael. So sometimes you need to go the extra mile, even if the other person isn't looking for it, but because Hashem is looking for it, because He knows that's what's best. So something to think about. Something to think about. In any case, I would say the tier one fulfillment of the mitzvah of Simcha is to bring a karbon in the Beis Hamikdash. Right, if that's what you did. You came to the Beis Hamikdash, you brought a karbon, and some of the karbonos you'd bring home and eat. Right, karbon Pesach came along with other karbanos. We'll talk about those more in depth at some point. But that's the mitzvah, to bring a karban and eat it. So a nice juicy steak. Okay, you know those like pictures of the cow with like all the different cuts. You know, like so you bring it home and slice it up however you want it. You know, yeah. And roast it.
Barbecue.
Okay,
lamb chops.
Okay, depends what kind of karban you're bringing. Yes.
Well, you're bringing either korban toda or korban chagiga.
Okay. 100%.
Rabbi, you left us with a steer here because you said there's no simcha on Shabbos. Now you told us that pasuk means there is a simcha.
Okay, so that's what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to lay the groundwork. Okay, this is our refresher. Okay, so you have to forgive me. What I'm trying to illustrate is that there's a different angle, a different dimension of simcha. They may both have simcha, but it's not the same simcha. Okay. For example, and that's where we're getting to right now, Spesamachta b'chagecha is a pasuk that appears by Yom Tov and has its own recipe for simcha. So we mention the karban, then the Gemara talks about meat and wine for men, for women, clothing and jewelry, and for kids, it says kleos vagozim, nuts and stuff like that. That would be like...
Marshmallows. That's right.
I think I mentioned them. Sure, right? Marshmallows. You got it. Okay. Absolutely. A father has an obligation to be Mesameach his family, right? Yeah, absolutely.
And a Rav has that obligation on Shabbos. That's why he has
That's right. That's right. I'm very thankful. There have been Yom Tovim where I went to Gift World and I bought my kids books, and they were very happy with that. But and that kept them busy a lot. You know, it's better for the dental bills and keeps them occupied more of Yom Tov than the candies. But okay. Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem.
He didn't say he loves them more than kids, just that they were happy.
Okay. So that's the unique Yom Tov dimension that doesn't apply to Shabbos. So we'll put that on the side for now, but that is just an illustration of where we see that there could be simcha on both days, but it's going to be expressed differently. It's going to be expressed differently. Okay? I'm going to throw out a question. We'll go further. And just keep this in mind. How do we start? We started by saying that the reason why Yom Tov can't coexist, so to speak, with Avelis, or Avelis can't coexist with Yom Tov, I guess is a better way to say it, is because there's this clash, right? One knocks out the other. Let me ask you, Shiloh. Can you drink wine and eat meat when you're not Avelis?
No. Oh, yeah. You can eat meat.
So I'm happy you got it wrong. A while back, someone asked me in the middle of the Shiva, he said, Rabbi, what do I do for Kiddush? It took me a second to understand what he was asking, but he said, I'm not supposed to drink wine. And I told him, politely, actually, you may drink wine.
Yes.
100%. For an onen is not allowed to drink wine.
Right.
Prior to the kvura, you're not supposed to drink wine or eat meat, okay? But if, you know, when they bring the bagels, I think maybe that's where it comes from. They bring bagels and they bring cream cheese, but if they want to bring some salami, it's also okay.
Right.
The Gemara actually talks about, it was in Ksubas for the Daf Yomi people, the beginning of the, I think, Daf Ches, says that one of the reasons Hashem created wine was to help the Avelim take it easy and just, you know, ease back into real life, you know?
Something like that.
Yes. It's a pasuk.
There you go.
So it's actually not just, is it okay to drink wine for Kiddush Friday night? You can drink wine. You know, it should be, as always, with the proper proportion and moderation. You know, there's a halach, and I think we passed it, maybe Chaf Aleph. You're not supposed to bring a baby to a Shiva house.
Yeah, it's okay.
Because when you bring a baby, so, you know, it jumps around, and, you know, I want to hold it, you want to hold it, and there's a certain mood in the Shiva house that has to be preserved for the mitzvah and for the, you know, the atmosphere to be correct. So you drink too much wine in the middle of Shiva, you know, probably not the best idea. Anyway, Noach is the one who teaches
about the mace, that's for sure.
What?
Okay. Maybe, I think you're just reinforcing my point. That's all I have to say. Okay. So you can drink wine and you can eat meat when you're in Avelis, right? So the Rav asked the following question.
And it's on Shabbos.
No, the whole week, the whole Shiva. As long as the deceased has been buried. No, I was just using that as an example because that was the context of when the person asked me the question. It was a Thursday and they said, oh, when is, you know, well, what am I going to do tomorrow night for Kiddush? But the whole week, wine is permissible. Mm-hmm. So the Rav, in one of his, again, landmark discussions of Hilchos Avelis, he gave this as part of the Yortzeit Shurim, the famous Yortzeit Shurim the Rav would give for his father, for Moshe Soloveitchik. A couple thousand people would come, they would fly in from all over into Lamport Auditorium, fill all the seats, and they'd listen to it in a different room also. So see, he asked this question. I know those were not the not the Yortzeit Shurim.
That was weekly shiur.
Sorry,
they were recorded and they were organized and published.
They were in Yiddish too.
We had the tapes. Yeah, I think Rabbi Ganak was the main editor when they put them out. I think we have a published volume here also.
You can get them on YouTube.
I'm sure you can get them on YouTube.
Okay. They're in Yiddish. The ones that he was father were all in Yiddish.
Yeah. So the Yortzeit. So in the Yortzeit, he asked the following question. I'm not going to even answer right now, but this you may lose sleep this week. You know, what can I tell you? If you think about this question, The Rav said, "How could the Gemara say there's a clash between Yom Tov and Avelis? If what did you tell me you do on Yom Tov to get the mitzvah simpler? You have meat and you drink wine, but I can do that during Avelis. So how where's the clash? They can coexist. Okay. So I'm not giving you an answer. Okay." But what he said was such a basic, fundamental point. It happens to inform us a lot about how we celebrate Yom Tov in general, but it also very beautifully answers the question. So, cliffhanger, okay? And we're going to go back to the Mishnah. All right? Here we go. I got to keep you coming back next week. You know, I don't know if there's going to be Kugel here. So.
We talked about the 3 weeks and the 9 days, and the Rav said they're the opposite, because instead of getting less intense, as with Shiva, it gets more intense.
Right. It goes in the opposite.
Got a whole half hour out of that.
Right. We discussed that at the Prabha, if anyone's keeping a score at home. I know you are, but other than that.
I was in Israel, so I missed the Prabha. I have to get it on tape.
Yes. We'll send you we got a YouTube of that also. Okay, so the Mishnah continues. We are about halfway through the Mishnah. The first word on the line is Rabbi Eliezer. Okay, Rabbi Eliezer, Omer, Misha Chara, Beis HaMikdash. Okay, the rest of this Mishnah is like, has young Israel Hilchos written all over it. You'll see what I mean. Rabbi Eliezer, Omer, Misha Chara, Beis HaMikdash, Atzeres Kishabas. What's Atzeres? Atzeres is Shavuos. So Rabbi Eliezer has a chiddush here. After the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, even though we're talking about Yom Tovim in general, we went through a whole discussion of Regolim. When it comes to Atzeres, Shavuos is different. Shavuos has a status of Shabbos. We just explained what Shabbos is, how it differs from Yom Tov, right? Shabbos counts for Shiva, doesn't interrupt Shiva. Yom Tovim don't count for Shiva, and they interrupt Shiva. So Shavuos used to be like the Regalim. After the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, it became the same as Shabbos. Why is that so? We'll see in a second. Okay? Rabbi Gamliel Omer, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippurim Kiregalim. Rabbi Gamliel adds, and this is basically how we paskin, that Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are just like Yom Tovim. Okay? We had, unfortunately, a passing in the community on Erev Rosh Hashanah a few weeks ago, and the Shiva was interrupted. Mm-hmm. Okay? The Kfura was, I don't know, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. The Shiva was interrupted. Okay? So that's because of what we just read. Okay? Had it happened a week later, and it was prior to Yom Kippur, same thing would happen. Happens to be, in this situation, Rosh Hashanah canceled the Shiva, and Yom Kippur cancels the Shloshim. Okay? So that's this Mishnah in real life. V'chachamim omrim lo k'divrei zeh, el atzeres k'regalim Rosh Hashanah v'yom kippurim k'shabbos. The Chachamim over here, we don't accept this lahalacha, they disagree on one point. This we actually do accept. Atzeres, Shavuos, is like the other Yom Tovim, whereas Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, because they're not Shalosh Regalim, they're one day, 2 day thing, but they don't have the same full status, full simcha, and so forth, and therefore they're treated like Shabbos. Okay, so just to summarize these last few lines, we take a little bit from each of them. We paskin again that Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur have a full status of Yom Tov. They'll cancel a Shiva. They'll cancel a Shloshim, and Atzeres Shavuos also has a full status of Yom Tov, and will cancel. Okay. As an aside, I'm sure you've seen this before, we have a principle, halacha kedivri hamekel ba'avil.
Yes.
Right? It's a unique concept. It appears here, appears in very, very few other contexts, but especially in a machlokas tanaim, we're going to adopt, even if the opinions don't all agree to each other, but we can take a little bit of a cool over here, a little bit of cool over there, and follow the more lenient approaches. Mm-hmm. Okay? Let's talk about Shavuos for a couple minutes. What's unique about Shavuos, the way we have it nowadays, is it's 1 day, it's 2 days, 1 day in Eretz Yisrael, 2 days here in Chutz La'aretz. But what happened back in the day was the following. Every person who came to the Beis HaMikdash on a Yom Tov, right, so they had to bring a series of karbanos. One was the Shalmei Simcha we spoke about before, the meat of the Simcha. They also brought a Shalmei Chagiga, okay? It's a separate karban, okay? A Chag, because it's a Chag, right? B'chag ha-matzos, b'chag ha-sukos, b'chag ha-shavuos, right? And you also bring an Olas Re'iyah. You appear in the Beis HaMikdash, you bring a carbon, that one's not eaten, that one's totally burnt up. Just have to mention this. This became viral on Twitter. I have a different version of the story, but I think they're both true. A Rebbe of mine, Reb Chaim Ilson. Donnie was in Kola for many years, right? Reb Chaim Ilson, besides being one of the closest Talmidim of the Rav, he was in the Rav Shul for 12 years, and he published a lot of the things that the Rav wrote towards the end of the Rav's life and after the Rav passed away. He's one of a kind. He's a one of a kind Talmud Chacham and personality, and I owe so much of whatever I learned from him and the style of learning. There's so many things I remember. I'm not going to go off on too much of a tangent, but he used to, if I wouldn't think my question out and formulate it succinctly and properly, he would yell at me and he would quote the Rav and he would say, he'd say my Rebbe used to say that Father would slap him if he asked something in 5 words and he could have said it in 4. And just a discipline. So, you know, some people nowadays it's hard, you know, not every kid is gonna, but I ate it up. That was my training. I was in Rav Yitzchak Kolmshir in MTA, so I was ready for it. You know, that didn't scare me away. So apparently Wilson was once online on the way to Israel, and you know, he was at the El Al security and they asked you all kinds of questions, you know, what the Parsha is, make sure that you check out, you know, all the CSS questions, right? So it was, I don't know, this time of year, November. And they asked him, where the woman behind the counter said to him, what's the next chag, right? And he said to him, and he said to her, Pesach. So this is someone with a long white beard and a long black hat. I was like, well, it's November. And she's like, Matomer, Hanukkah.
Right.
He said, Hanukkah is not a chag. It says in the Torah, chag asukos, chag asukos. There's no korban chagigo on Hanukkah, so you don't bring it. So I remember he took issue in Eretz Yisrael, so that, they served the Shabbos meal. Again, he was trying to make a point. It's his way of, God forbid, he wasn't trying to give her a hard time, but it's a nakuda of emes, the Torah tells us what a chag is. That's a chag. So we had a Shabbos meal, and they gave, these tall, skinny Coca-Cola bottles, And around Hanukkah time, it says on the Coca-Cola bottles, Chag Sameach.
Ah.
I was very upset about that. It's not a chag. Okay? So
they paskened it is.
I guess. Okay. The Coke factories in Bnei Brak. I don't know. They're not talking to the rest of the people in Bnei Brak, I guess.
Well, wait a minute. Alexa wishes you Chag Sameach.
Okay. All right. That's it. Okay.
They usually say Chag Orot.
Okay. So how does it impact on us? So a carbon chagiga is brought. That's the third carbon that's brought on the Shol Shulgon. Now, normally, if you bring these carbons as soon as you can, when you get to Yerushalayim. But there's hundreds of thousands of people. You can't always bring it the first day. So you have Sukkah starts, day one. You have 7 days. You have 3 nights there, so you can bring a carbon whenever you're able to bring it. You bring it on one of those days.
Right.
Same thing when it comes to Pesach. It's a nice long yontif. You have plenty of time. Okay. Shavuos is very short.
Yeah, one day.
Oh, so the halacha is, even though Shavuos is one day, you still have a total of 7 days afterwards to bring the karban. So comes along the chachamim, and they say, it has the full status of any other yontif, because you don't have to get it all in on day one. You still have that same week, like any one of the other Shor Shagolim, to fulfill your karbanos. So therefore, treat it, as far as the avil is concerned, treat it with the same status that it'll knock out of Avelis. Comes along Rabbi Eliezer and he says, once the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, no, you can't do that. Because what do we do? What are we celebrating after Yontif is over? There's no carbon to bring anyway. Mm-hmm. The whole point of treating Atzeres, Shavuos, as a full 7-day Yontif is by virtue of the fact that there's still carbonos that can be brought. So it has some sort of quasi-holiday significance to it. Once the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, then what do you sell? What opportunity is there to even give it a flavor of a yontif?
Wait, what do you get for one day? I'm a little stuck here. It says, Rashi, Shein Latzeres Tashlum Kol Zayin Ve'Eino Ela Yom Echad.
Right.
For what?
I'm not Shavuos in Eretz Yisrael is one day.
First day, but I'm not bringing any Tashlum in.
That's exactly what Rabbi Lezer says. Rabbi Lezer Paskin's not how we Paskin. He Paskin's that Shavuos has a full yontif status. He says, no, it's just like Shabbos. Because there's nothing to talk about. Once the first day's over, it's like a one-day thing like Shabbos, like Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, according to the Chachamim. Only when the Beis HaMikdash was around and there was a relevance to those days that follow, then you can talk about Atzeres being a full-scale Yom Tov to knock out Avelis. Okay?
I don't remember what the young Israel's men are.
Oh.
But I know that.
So here we go. So here is where we encounter the World War III Tachanun. Whether you say Tachanun after Yisru Chag of Shavuos, okay?
Yeah, poor Rabbi Weiss, I forgot.
Okay, well, it must be on one of these postings from Rabbi Weiss. The official minhag here in Young Israel is we do say Tachanun. If you look in the Shulchan,
that's the minhag. We fight every year.
Yeah.
After Sukkot,
same idea, right. Those two minhagim go together, but this is what it's based upon. Right. If you look in the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah says, like we do, after Yisru Chag, you stop, you go back to saying Tachanun. The Magen Avraham, commenting on the Ramah, says, but there's some places that continue omitting Tachanun for the whole 7 days, and it all comes down to this idea, to this Mishnah. In the same way, it's kind of ironic, in the same way that we treat Shavuos as a full-scale Yontif, as if it was seven days, even though it's not. So some have the minhag to therefore omit Tachanun because it's that quasi-Yontif status, but we say the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, right? Or we say, what does Tachanun have to do with Karbonos in the Beis HaMikdash? Right? Okay, however you want to explain it, that's what this is based upon. Okay, so I have in mind, God willing, when we get closer to Shavuos, I'm not sure it's going to stop any machlokas, but I think I owe it to the Shul to give a shir on appreciation of Tachanun, because we're one of the last holdouts in Klal Yisrael who are still saying Tachanun in those days, after Shavuos. But that's what they do in the Beis HaMikdash in YU, so it's not so crazy. The advantage of the minhagim in YU is it's the same minhagim for the last hundred and something years. There's no board, you know. Well, there's a board, but they don't get involved in tachnon, you know. So a lot, the minhagim in many ways are preserved much more than sometimes, you know, other shuls where there's changeover and turnover in leadership. So, you know, we have a little more pristine continuity going back to the great people who opened up the Beis Medrash.
Well, that pertains also, let's say, to after Sukkot from Matan Tishrei, there's some people also going to say.
Yeah, so it's a similar concept. That has a different explanation. The reason why many communities don't say Tachron at the end of Sukkot, the simple understanding is because since most of the month went by without saying Tachron, so we just finish off, you know, on a good note. Okay. Some say maybe in the same way that we have this Tashlumen after Shavuos, we have a Tashlumen after Shemini Atzeres. That's a little harder to understand because this would seem like to be something unique to Shavuos and the way that it's a one-day thing, with that extra.
Why should the stopping of a Beis have to do with being at 7 days? It's a chag. The Torah says chag ha-matzos.
Right. You're saying once it's a chag, so what comes afterwards.
That's what the Chachamim are saying.
Right. The Chacham say, you could put it like this. You can say Shavuos, like Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, right? That's where according to Rabbi Elazar, the reason why Shavuos doesn't count is because, we'll say like the Shavuos doesn't pack the same punch, right? Because it doesn't carry with it that same big picture event of a whole week, so it doesn't have the koach to have as much of an impact on the Avelos, okay? You could explain it like this. You could say that over the course of Sukkot, you're going to be celebrating for 7 days. Comes to Shavuos, v'samachtu l'chagecha, after the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, you have 1 day of celebration. So the clash with Avelos is not as stark. You could put it like that. That's the idea, but that's exactly what the Machlokas is about. Okay? I think we should probably stop here. I just wanted to add one thing. Okay, you know, let's, God willing, next week, we will pick up with the Gemara, but now you have all the background information. I do want to just add, I'm sorry, I didn't say it earlier. The series of Shurim is dedicated for Refuah Shleima for Neil Olshan, who is unfortunately still in the hospital and waiting for a little more of a stable condition to consider a possible procedure. But Nachman Shlomo Ben Leizisel, Soshar Chol Yisrael, he really needs Refuah Shleima. He was a consistent member. Ben Leah Zissel. He was a consistent member of the Shir when Rabbi Weiss was here, and he's very eager to join us, whether it's on Zoom, whether it's on person. And I promised him, he was still at his house, I promised him when we get to the next Masechta, I'm going to personally deliver him a new Gemara for whatever we're learning next, Mirtz Hashem. Right. So let's daven that we should see that day very soon, Mirtz Hashem. I wish you have a wonderful Shabbos.